Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Here we are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Zach Lang from Oilers Nation is going to join us momentarily here. And we do, in fact, have Zach on the line right now. So, Zach, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. Doing well, thanks. Doing well. Counting down the minutes until Wednesday night. It feels like it's taken forever, to say the least.
Yeah, we've got a long lead into this. So lots of time for, you know, the fans of both teams to engage in some really cordial discourse and friendly disagreements, friendly banter on social media, which is great. So, all right, look, you know, Edmonton wrapped up their series against LA. The Canucks and Nashville were still playing. They knew they were going to face the winner. Who do you think Edmonton fans wanted to face more in the second round of the playoffs?
Good question. I think the Oilers fans were pretty comfortable with whoever it was going to be. I think the excitement of having a Canadian-on-Canadian team series, I think, was something that was appealing to a lot of people, and myself personally. I know the Oilers, of course, got to play Calgary a couple of years ago, and the excitement around that series in Edmonton and in Alberta as a whole was palpable. There was a certain buzz in the air, and it feels like it's back with Vancouver. So I think if you ask anybody, I think they're pretty happy that the Oilers and Canucks are squaring off here.
Zach, how much does Vancouver sweeping the season series against the Oilers loom in the minds of Oilers fans? We had a discussion in advance of the first round in this market where everyone thought the Predators were lightweights relative to the Kings because the Kings had smoked Vancouver four straight. I don't think, based on what we saw in the playoffs, that the Kings would have actually posed as significant a threat as the Predators. How do you sort of weight the slanted regular season outcomes between these two teams?
I really don't weigh too heavily, honestly. I think the playoffs are such a different animal, and I think the Oilers have shown that even in their own game against LA in the first round. I think that series was a lot closer than, you know, is maybe given credit for, and I think a lot of that comes to the credit of the LA Kings. They played the Oilers really, really hard, and granted, they only won one game out of that series, but the one that they did, you know, it was a strong win for them. And, you know, even in games 3, 4, 5, those were close games, right? Edmonton going down to LA, taking two wins, only allowing one goal against. I think it also speaks to how well the Oilers have been playing as a whole here as well. I think when you look at it, you know, take a look at what happened to the Winnipeg Jets, right? They dominated the Colorado Avalanche in the regular season, and Colorado absolutely toyed with them in the playoffs in the first round there, save for game one, and Colorado made the necessary adjustments, and Winnipeg didn't. So I think right there, that's kind of proof in the pudding that, you know, the regular season doesn't really matter a whole lot when it comes to playoff hockey.
You know, one of the interesting things that's already developing in the conversation around this series is the Canucks, despite, you know, winning the Pacific Division, obviously having home ice in this series, are very much the underdog, I think, in the mind of a lot of the experts making picks out there. You know, the betting markets, Dom Lucision's model at The Athletic that we reference here. You know, it's an interesting place to be. I know Rick Tocchet was kind of leaning into that as well, saying, hey, we embrace it and no problem being doubted. From Edmonton's perspective, with this group that obviously has so much talent, has had so many good teams over the last number of seasons, but hasn't been able to get over the hump, get to the Stanley Cup Finals, how much pressure do you think there is on this group, especially, you know, being a pretty significant favorite now in round two against the Canucks?
Well, you know what? The Oilers have been Stanley Cup favorites since pretty much the start of the regular season and the preseason. And I don't really think it's ever been something that they really put a whole lot of weight into or think about a lot. I think this is a really calm and collected group, and I think that they're playing some of the best hockey as a team that I've maybe seen from this group in the McDavid-Draisaitl era. I think the thing for me that impressed me the most about their first round series with the Kings was that the Oilers could win in different ways, and I think that's something that we've struggled to see, especially come playoff time, for these Oilers in the past. I referenced the Games 3 and Game 4 performances where the Oilers only allowed one goal against in those two games, and I think it's making Edmonton a dangerous team right now. And I don't really think that any of the outside noise has ever really affected this group, especially in the last number of years. And I think we've seen it again this season here where, they were never cracking under pressure or anything like that. And especially after the early season struggles that they had this year, it really felt like they were ready for whatever came their way. And I think a lot of that has to do with their head coach, Chris Knobloch.
What's been the impact? I mean, the Oilers are number one in the NHL by points since Knobloch took over. I mean, what sort of impact has he had in your view?
Pretty significant one, honestly. I mean, when the coaching change happened, I was really questioning it. I was worried that it was maybe a little bit too quick to dismiss Jay Woodcroft, given the success that the Oilers have had under him for the last number of years. But I think a lot of it has to do with Chris Knobloch's demeanor. He's very calm, cool, and collected, and he seems to be an absolutely excellent communicator with the players, really making it known to them what their roles are and what they need to do and what those expectations are. And that was something that Jay Woodcroft brought a lot of in his early days in Edmonton as well. Of course, he had taken over for Dave Tippett, and I remember at the time, Derek Ryan actually was speaking after Woodcroft came in and kind of talked about how he, as a depth player on the Oilers roster, was finally feeling like he was finding a role again on the team. And I think that's something that kind of got away from Woodcroft at the start of the season here. Everything was so chaotic with the way that they were playing that I feel like a lot of people just kind of got lost in the fray. So, I think the ability for Knobloch to be a strong communicator, and I think there's a lot of credit that should be going the way of Paul Coffey as well, because he kind of parachutes down from the owner's box to an assistant coach role, and everybody was kind of like, okay, well, here we go again. This is an old Oilers nepotism move once again. But Coffey has been tremendous with this defensive group, playing some of the best defensive hockey that I've seen from an Oilers blue line in my lifetime watching this team. So there's been a lot of really good things that Knobloch and his coaching staff have done this year.
So the Oilers looked really strong, I thought, in the 5-game series win over the Kings. Obviously, they're the favorites coming in to this series, and, lots of things going well for the Oilers right now, and certainly over the latter part of the regular season. If they are going to run into difficulties, I don't even want to say necessarily lose the series, but if things are going to go a little not according to plan, what are the potential danger spots for the Oilers? Like what can you look at right now and saying, that makes me a little nervous, or that's something that could come back to bite them?
Yeah, well, early in the season, the big thing that really plagued this Oilers team was the transition game. The Oilers really struggled in defending off of the rush, and a lot of the goals that they gave up early on this season were exactly that. And I think one thing we've seen from the Vancouver Canucks this year is that's an area that they've really excelled in. And the Canucks, of course, tore up the Oilers in the regular season, largely through the transition game. So for the Oilers, I think that and their neutral zone play is probably going to be one of the most important parts of this entire series. Both teams run similar forechecks. Both teams have similar defensive structures as well. So that's kind of going to be the area that I'm kind of keying in on right now for this series. One of our writers at Oilers Nation, Bruce Kerlock, actually wrote a tremendous article today that went up looking at a tactical preview of this series between the two teams, where he kind of looks at the X's and O's of how both of these teams play and line up against each other. So that's some great reading right there if you're somebody who's interested in that side of the game.
What's the confidence in Stuart Skinner in net right now? Your confidence, fans' confidence. How is the city of Edmonton feeling about Stuart Skinner in goal?
Well, the city of Edmonton is feeling great about Stuart Skinner in goal after game 3 of their first round series against LA. The first two games were pretty rough. They were pretty ugly. Not that Skinner was necessarily playing bad per se, but the numbers bore out a pretty ugly scene where the Canucks were getting a lot of bounces and there was 9 goals against the Oilers through those first two games. But then you look at the last 3 of that series and Stuart Skinner has absolutely slammed the door. And that's a big reason why the Oilers were able to advance was his play. So right now the confidence is sky high in Stuart Skinner. This is an Edmonton boy who grew up watching the Edmonton Oilers, has idolized Grant Fuhr his entire life, and now gets to play on the biggest stage in the NHL wearing the orange and blue. So he is somebody who I think is absolutely ready for this moment and ready to step further into the spotlight. The thing that's always impressed me about him is his mental makeup. Arguably one of the strongest that I've ever seen from an NHL player. His ability to process, you know, bad games or mistakes that happen and move on from it is remarkable, and definitely one of the things that's his biggest strengths here. So, yeah, I think Edmonton fans are feeling really, really good about Skinner right now.
Zach, appreciate the time and the look ahead to the series. You're right. Wednesday night feels like a long way away. So we got lots of time to break things down in exhaustive detail here. Thanks for doing this with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Zach Lang from Oilers Nation weighing in on the Edmonton Oilers as they get set to take on the Vancouver Canucks. Interesting to hear him point to the transition game for the Oilers and pointing out that the Canucks did have a lot of success in transition against the Oilers in those early season wins, because that was not really a calling card for the Canucks at all this year. Quite the opposite.
But it was in the earlier part of the season. In October and November, it wasn't that they had a lot of rush chances. It was that they converted
they were scoring
on everything.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, they were constantly converting. But in terms of volume, this team isn't a huge threat off the rush. That's not how they play, for the most part. That's not what JT Miller means when he's talking about Canucks hockey.
Right? No.
I'd put the sort of opposite side of this down, too, right? Like, one of the reasons I don't really care about the 4-0 regular season record between these two teams, even though I actually think there's something, and we'll get into this, to take away from that fourth game. There's something that I want to take away from that
fourth
game, and let's bookmark it and get into it in the next segment. But the first three came before the coaching change, and it's really after the coaching change that Edmonton's results matched everything else, and they leveled up massively defensively, right? That they took a big step defensively once Knobloch was hired. The other side of this is they didn't have McDavid in the fourth game. So it's like, if the theory is this Oilers team's one of the best in the league after the coaching change with McDavid in the lineup, then we kind of haven't seen this matchup.
Zero games that match that sample.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, is that putting too fine a point on it? Maybe. Because again, I do think there's something from that. So look, I have five reasons why I think the Oilers will win. I have five reasons why I think the Canucks will win. Let's save the Canucks will win for the next segment, so
okay.
we can like really dwell on
okay.
the team that our listeners care about more,
mm-hmm.
but we can caption what Zach just talked about with my list of things,
reasons
the Oilers will win.
All right.
Okay, so number one.
Go for it.
Number one.
Is it Connor McDavid?
You're going to be stunned here. It's Connor McDavid. But I want to put it into the context of this, which is that the Oilers have an unmatchable top gear, which isn't to say they'll hit it. I'm just saying when this Oilers team is in top gear, right, when they're in storming the castle mode, the way they were in the early part of that series against LA, they are perhaps the most fearsome side in the league, period. Right? There may not be the only other team that maybe can match their top gear is the Colorado Avalanche, in my opinion. I just don't think that anyone else has the ability to completely throttle their opponent for 25, 30 minutes, both at 5-on-5 and then on the power play, as the Oilers do when their top-end talent is on the lineup. This is why I've been so high on them all year, like even when they came out flat in October and November prior to dispatching Woodcroft. And I don't think, here's sort of the interesting part for me, I don't think there's any easy answers for how Vancouver can handle that, right? Especially given how frequently they looked like, in my opinion, a one-line team in the first round, right? So who do you match up against McDavid, right? If you match up JT Miller against McDavid, well, then you're putting the guy who has the best chance to score for your team in a role where he's going to be chasing McDavid around the ice. Like, even if Miller plays that to a draw, it's hard to imagine that that's going to be, like, super productive zone time for the Canucks where they're, like, able to play Canucks hockey.
And then you still need to throw somebody against Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Right. So, in this case, probably Lindholm.
Lindholm, yeah.
Okay. But you know, maybe the temptation is to go Lindholm against McDavid, except Lindholm got killed in that matchup 2 years ago. That was during his 40-goal season, when last he saw McDavid in the playoffs, which was, of course, that fateful Flames-Oilers series. One of the biggest reasons Calgary lost was that they went with that strength-on-strength Lindholm versus McDavid matchup. McDavid tore him to shreds, and it was only late in the series that Daryl Sutter adjusted and went backland against McDavid, to far better effect than he'd had with Lindholm. So, and then honestly, you even get into like McLeod versus Pettersson, which should be an edge for Vancouver, but based on what we saw in the first round, I don't know that it is. I don't know, like that Holloway McLeod Perry line. First of all, they're going to extract a price on Pettersson.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of big bodies, and in Perry's case too, like, you know, some ability to disturb stuff as well, a stuff disturber, as it were. So, you know, there's, anyway, if you throw Miller on McDavid, can you survive if the line that's your most potent threat to score slash turn momentum, right, spends that volume of time in their own end of the rink? That to me is like the Oilers' top gear and how the Canucks match up against it. That's reason number one why the Oilers are favored so heavily and why they could win the series. The Oilers' power play is number two. They just pulled apart a Kings PK that was easily the best in the league. Like, as well as the Canucks have trended on the power penalty kill, especially against Nashville, where I think their PK's like got to be in the top three reasons. Like JT Miller caping up, Canucks goaltending depth holding, and their PK dominating.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the main three ingredients to their round one win.
And, you know, you're already hearing, you know, Rick Tocchet talking about the refereeing and, you know, doesn't want to see those embellishments get calls. Like, he wants to make this, first of all, just raving about the job the refs did in the first series. Like, best communication I've had in a long time from referees in the playoffs. Like, absolutely raving about it as Rick Tocchet wants. And, like, he knows this has to be a low penalty series for the Canucks to have a chance here, right? Like, we're all going to talk about discipline. That's 100% right. 100% right. But the refs have a big role to play in this, too.
100%. 100%. And not just the refs, but Canucks players. Like, the Canucks do have some penalty-prone players, especially on the back end, right? And the Oilers have the speed to get inside and put you in uncomfortable positions. You got to avoid those, like, stick infractions if you're Myers or Zadorov or sort of some of the Canucks players with higher penalty taken rates, right? You know, you even have to be conscious of not drawing too many. Like, you don't want to sell.
Right. You
don't
want...
Because when you get a penalty called on you, you're more likely...
Yeah.
You know, like, when you draw a penalty, you're also more likely to...
You don't want to be in a spot where you've had the first three power plays in a game. You know what I mean? Even if you're, like, 1-for-3, it's like, uh-oh, we're in trouble here. They're probably going to get one.
100%.
Yeah.
So, anyway, here's the key part of this, and I think this is one of the major reasons why the Oilers are so heavily favored, right? We know that penalties are called more frequently early in a series, right? Which means for me anyway, as I think about this series, like what's the highest danger point for the Canucks? It's going to be the first three or four games where the whistles still get liberally used, utilized.
Where the refs are like trying to set the tone for the series and like, hey, this is what we want. And they're really being sticklers. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is where the Oilers PP can kill... The Oilers PP. The Oilers penalty power play can kill Vancouver dead. They can kill anyone dead. And they can do it. The scary part is they can do it potentially quickly with the way the playoff games are officiated. So, you know, as much as Vancouver's penalty kill has improved enormously over the course of the season and is coming off like their two best weeks of the year, this is a totally different beast. And the Edmonton power play gives them this ceiling case, right? Like to actually feed Vancouver their lunch in this series. The scenarios where Edmonton wins in five, Edmonton wins in four, those are scenarios where the special teams battle is very lopsided in their favor. And I
will say, we'll probably get into this from the Canucks perspective in the other segment too, but another reason why I think games one and two are just like huge, they're all like, games one and two important in every series, but just like hugely, hugely important for Canucks going into this one.
Well, and I think, I mean, you touched on it, but every call is going to feel so massive in this series. And I just want to like warn everybody, like that's going to potentially make it a frustrating watch, right? And probably frustrating to follow the discourse too, right? Tocchet, you noted too, praising the referees luxuriously.
Mm-hmm.
Van didn't get a single power play opportunity in game six. After Zadorov called out the officiating following game five. Subplot to watch. Depth offense. Okay, Edmonton's roster is top heavy, but I think it's less top heavy than Vancouver's at this point. With the way Vancouver's forward depth has sort of trended, right? Like in previous seasons, you could say stuff like limit McDavid and you limit the Oilers. But right now, limit Miller and you limit the Canucks is like more true than that, right? So Vancouver doesn't have a goal from one of their bottom six forwards as they take line rushes in this series. The DiGiuseppe line was on for that Zadorov 3-1 goal, which deflected off a Predator's stick. The Pettersson line, Pettersson was on the ice for the Suter goal, but the Pettersson line has not been on the ice for a single goal. The Oilers have three lines that outscored the Kings and a top line that outscored them by a 3-1 margin. The Miller line outscored Nashville, but that's it. Like, even the Lindholm line was outscored in that series, right? The Canucks did not win their minutes with any other forward line on the ice. Oh, sorry, they did with the fourth line, but that was 1-4.
Yep.
So, you know, I actually think the Oilers kind of have a bit of a depth advantage here, because right now on recent form, players like Janmark and McLeod and Fogle and Holloway honestly seem more threatening to me than Hoglander and Mikheyev and Lafferty and PDG, right? That needs to be a different story if the Canucks are advancing here. Rush defense, we talked about this a little bit, but, you know, the Predators, as that series went along, started to find space behind the Canucks' defense as the second as that first-round series went along. Canucks were able to stay in lanes and force shots more often than not, but that's against a Predators team. The Oilers have way more finishing talent, right? You're not going to be as fortunate against Edmonton if you're surrendering chances off the rush like the Canucks did in games 3, 4, 5, 6. Of that first round series. And in particular, McDavid getting out there for any minutes against non-Hughes Canucks defenders is a significant speed mismatch and could be a real problem. I think it's going to be a big challenge for Foote to manage that.
Yep.
Like, that's tough.
I want to talk about Hughes and his deployment in the next segment, yeah, for sure, because I think that's a massive storyline.
No question. Yeah, well, especially if he's worn down from the heavy punishment, yeah, Predators, forecheckers, like, we're able to subject him has his minutes limited.
Probably best games of the series in games 5 and 6 for Quinn Hughes. Yeah. I was very worried coming out of game 4, did a lot to alleviate those concerns in games 5 and 6.
Quinn Hughes, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, lack of offense generally from the Canucks, okay? With the way this Oilers team can score, I don't see a scenario where the Canucks advance in which they don't win at least one, like, 5-4 or 4-3 score game. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be at least a couple high-scoring games in this series, and the Canucks need to be able to win at least one of them, right? Maybe multiples, to be totally honest with you. That's almost hard to envision after what we witnessed in round 1 against a far less stout defensive team, right? Vancouver's power play was lifeless in round 1, right? And that's going to need to change. No question about that. Like, they got nothing from their depth scoring lines, as we went over. That also needs to change. There are just too many, like, significant minutes that this team is playing where they're just not generating anything. Like, the Susi Myers minutes right now.
Mm-hmm.
Canucks are playing great defense. They're not getting outscored in those minutes, but they're not a threat to score in those minutes. The way the Pettersson line looks, the way the fourth line looks, right? Like, there's too many holes in terms of, like, significant moments where Hughes and Miller aren't on the ice, where the Canucks are really struggling to score. So if you're a Canucks fan who thinks, like, Stuart Skinner is gettable, totally fair, right? Or you're looking at the Oilers' defense on paper and, like, licking your chops about what Hughes-Miller heavy shifts look like against Cody Ceci or Deharnay or whatever, right? I think that's fair, but you also need to be generating at a reasonable clip if you're going to be able to count on exposing them as opposed to just counting on luck, right? Like, you're going to need that critical mass, like the Pugh Suter thing. Generate 10 glorious chances and one of them's going in, right? You need to be generating more. So, I just think Vancouver is without question going to need to find an entirely more dynamic level than they did in round 1 against the Predators to have a puncher's chance.
And we can get into what has to happen for that to happen for the Canucks. Obviously, Elias Pettersson's name is going to be front and center there. Like, even if we broke down the matchups, right, he has to be a game breaker. He has to be a superstar player in this series.
You cannot get outscored. I mean, I would have told you cannot get outscored in Pettersson versus Sisson's head-to-head minutes, and then the Canucks survived it. But absolutely, given the difficulty of, like, you know, whether it's McDavid versus Miller or Lindholm and Dreisaitl versus Miller or Lindholm, like, that matchup needs to be one that the Canucks at least hold square in, as opposed to being outscored 3-0 the way they were against the Predators.
All right. So that was the kind of what Edmonton needs to do, or 5 reasons why Edmonton can win the series. We'll get into
what 5 reasons why Edmonton's so heavily favored.
Sure. We'll get into some reasons in the next segment, spend a little more time on them why the Canucks could potentially pull off the upset in this series and take down the Edmonton Oilers in round two. First time.
And I didn't want to lead with the negativity. We just had an Oilers guest.
Yeah.
So I wanted to
got it out of the way. Now we have a full segment to get into
the fun stuff.
First round two series at home since 2011, by the way, for Canucks fans. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll get into how the Canucks can pull off the upset next, coming up here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right, we got all the doom and gloom out of the way in that last segment, Drancer.
Well, I don't think it was doom or gloom. It was just analysis.
Typical Canucks talk negativity.
It was pretty balanced.
Measured analysis. All right, but I do think it's interesting to build the case in this series for the underdogs. And again, yeah, like it's not supposed to be like a negative or a pejorative. It's just factual. They're the underdogs. That's fine. Guess what? Underdogs win all the time. It's a thing that happens.
It's hockey.
It's one of the reasons we like sports. It's one of the reasons we like hockey, is that weird things happen. Although
the Canucks were underdogs in game six and they won.
I will note, I picked all eight winners in the first round. Correctly.
Good for you. So I went six.
And I looked at it and
it's
chalky. I think I just picked the favorite in every series.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, what a job by me.
Pretty chalky.
It was extremely, extremely chalky.
Yeah,
so
the Leafs let me down, of course.
And of course they did.
And then the Jets one I was just wrong on. And this year made the mistake of buying into their game one. Winnipeg Jets, no one buys stock after game one of the playoffs. Reminder, last year you fell for it. This year I fell for it.
By the way, just before we get into the positives, congratulations and shout out to former Canucks associate coach Rick Bowness.
Yeah.
Most recently, of course, the Jets head coach retiring after 40 years behind the bench in different capacities, 50 years in pro hockey.
Unbelievable.
50 years in pro hockey. So shout out to Rick Bowness for a great career.
You know, obviously we know about him running the defense here.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the development that happened, players like Bieksa and Hamhuis and on down. Well, not Hamhuis so much, but Bieksa, Edler.
Yeah.
Some of the guys that came up under Bowness and obviously made immense impacts over the course of their careers.
Victor Hedman in Tampa helping
Victor Hedman,
him,
I was
right?
going to shout yeah. out. Yeah, Chris Tanev, right? So, excellent defensive coach, went on a miracle run to the Stanley Cup final in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously this year had some personal challenges, but the Winnipeg Jets punched well above their weight. Under a pretty spectacular first season, if not the storybook ending that he would have wanted, with the way that series turned against them in the first round against a wildly good Colorado Avalanche.
Oh,
team.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think, you know, it's not on the coach when you lose to MacKinnon and Makar. But,
no.
But yeah.
Incredible.
A fabulous
career.
Congratulations to him.
Okay. By the way, another Canucks-related coaching tidbit, Travis Green potentially getting the Ottawa Senators job, or some reports out there. We can react to that more when it's official, if it's official, at some point. But how the Canucks, what?
No, just that's interesting.
It sure is.
I think you've, obviously I feel bad for Travis Green, but I think there's going to need to be like a PR war to win over the Sens
fans.
Faithful, yeah. You know, I think there was like real hopes about like Berube and,
mm-hmm.
and on and on. And obviously the things just did not go well in New Jersey this year. I don't think that's necessarily on the associate coach who took over when the season was basically already dead. But, you know, been a tough go for him since 2021.
All right. Five ways or reasons the Canucks can win the series.
Well, and I got this as make this a series. Because I think more than anything, what I want to focus on is like, the 75% according to the Athletic model, or the 70% implied probability according to the gambling odds. You know, I saw ESPN had a panel of experts, and it was like 23 of 24 selected the Oilers.
Ryan
to win.
Clark, baby, our guy.
Our guy, Ryan Clark.
Coming through for Canucks fans.
But, you know, and by the way, like, I don't think that's a lot different than, like, Sportsnet's experts panel.
No.
Or, like, the Athletic, like, people are counting out the Canucks.
Well, and I will say, in defense of these media panels where, like, the whole company gets everyone to pick a series, and then it's, like, you know, 23 out of 24, it's not as if ESPN is saying the Oilers have a 96% chance to win. It's just a bunch of people looking at, like, a 65% chance and being like, yeah, I'll pick that over the 35%. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it always makes it look way more skewed than it is in reality.
Well, first of all, also, you read those expert panels and no one picks sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone remember to pick a sweep. I think it should be a rule.
Not in round two.
Always.
No.
Round two, the middle rounds are where you get the most weird sweeps. Everyone should always pick a sweep.
I don't think you have
to.
Put
your money where your mouth is. No, everyone's too scared to do it because it feels disrespectful. It's too, like, risky. But then it's going to happen. Someone's going to sweep somebody. Every round. Did we have two? We had one.
One, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, there's always going to be one. Anyway. So, five reasons the Canucks can make this a series. Number one is Artturas Seelofs. Let's start there. So, one of the reasons that Dom's model scores this so harshly is the model has literally no idea what to do. With Artturas Seelofs. So, Artturas Seelofs has 9 NHL games, and his data looks good. Looks like a good player. Good AHL track record. We've seen him excel in big games in the World Championships. I know that seems silly, but, like, for Latvia, in front of a home crowd, people, do you know what they, do you know what they chant, the Latvian fans?
What?
She loves me, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, it is cool. It's a good chant. So, anyway, this guy's been in pressure cooker moments and delivered. And like, he's a high pedigree goaltender. You watch him play. He's athletic. He's calm. He speaks calmly after games. He's, like, nonplussed by the fact that JT Miller took his dress shirt. He just wears it home.
He's like, yeah, it's a great shirt. What are you guys talking about?
It's sick. I look sick. So this guy seems pretty chill. Seems extremely talented. There's no reason why he can't be good. But the model sees a goaltender with 9 games, a 9-game NHL track record, and they're like, this guy, he might be good, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of assumes that, in fact, he's probably replacement level or thereabouts, right? Not good backup, not starter level, although those are perfectly reasonable range of outcomes for his level of impact to be at, but replacement level. This is because of the volatility of goaltending. The model assumes it can't evaluate a goaltender based on 9 games, and it probably can't, right? Like, you can come in to the league, like, Patrick Lalime played, like, 10 games before allowing 3 goals. Patrick Lalime wasn't a good goaltender. Wasn't a great goaltender anyway, right? Spencer Martin was a 930 across 13 games during the Bruce There It Is season,
mm-hmm.
right? He hadn't played an NHL game in, like, 5 years, comes in. Good, decent pedigree guy, like Canada U18 player on his way up. 930 across 13 games. Canucks signed him to a 2-year one-way deal. And then he got, like, chased out of town. There was literally a mob with pitchforks and, like, included some of his teammates. So the model assumes that it doesn't know enough about goaltending to grade Seelofs well. And again, this is why the model is sort of lower on the Canucks even than the betting markets are. But we know, and bettors kind of suspect, that Seelofs can be imposing.
There's at least a range that goes a lot above that, right?
And
whether they have a long track record or not, goalies can be volatile, especially in a short, you know, a 4-7 game sample.
Yep.
So there's reasons to kind of weight that uncertainty for all goalies, but I think especially with Artturas Seelofs, and we've seen the highs. It doesn't mean he's going to deliver the highs. There's downside too, but I think when you're an underdog in any series, and I think this goes with the Canucks, the way I think of it a lot of times is there's one path, or at least there's fewer paths. There's kind of one script you need the series to go on.
Yes.
And for the Canucks, it's Artturas Seelofs really good. That has to be part of the story.
Artturas Seelofs is really good. That has to be part of the story. And, you know, this underdog game script that you're talking about, series script, you can sort of begin to feel it happen over the course of a series where Seelovs plays really well. Skinner maybe doesn't play as well.
Mm-hmm.
It begins to feel like, within the context of individual games or stretch of games, like the Oilers have to work two times as hard as Vancouver to get a goal, right? And then you can like feel that sapping the team's confidence. You can see the body language after another, you work so hard to tie the game, and then the Canucks come back down and score, and it's like a Lafferty goal off the rush, and you can like see people slump, and it saps your confidence, and frustration mounts. And that has to be a part of a series that the Canucks win.
And you have to get into that script as early as possible. Again, like speaking of the importance of the early games, if you win like a 2-1 game on Wednesday, right, where Seelovs is really, really good, and you know the Canucks do just enough to win, and just start that sense of frustration and doubt creeping into Edmonton's mind, right? That like... we all know the story of like, oh, this goalie no one's ever heard of, and now he's stopping everything, right? And how frustrating
Bennington,
that is.
Matt Murray. I mean, we see it like every second year.
Yeah.
Bobrovsky.
Make that part of the story early. Seelovs has the talent. It's no guarantee. It's far from a guarantee, but he absolutely has the talent to do that.
Number two. The PK is trending upward, and it doesn't need to shut Edmonton down. 4-on-5, like when Edmonton's on the power play. So Vancouver's 4-on-5 play doesn't need to be like locked down the way it was against the Predators. But it needs to limit the damage.
It has to have some resistance.
Like, you need to keep, and it's so funny how you talk about the Oilers' power play. It's like, if they go 25%, you're like, okay.
Oh. Massive victory.
Huge.
Huge victory if you keep them 25%.
So you need to keep them to roughly that, though. Right, like if they're scoring on every three power plays, it's gonna be really tough to just like hang on to get this series to the end game stages. Because again, later on in the series, it's going to be harder to get calls. Right, we are going to see the officiating transmogrify or whatever mutate over the course of the season or over the course of this series to the point where whistles are like. Rare, and really it's like you have to put the puck over the glass or like high stick a guy until he bleeds in the face, right? Like those are the sort of the things that will draw penalties. So a month ago I'd have said for sure this is the biggest mismatch in this series, and it still could be, right? This is also the area where the Oilers can make the quickest work of the Canucks if they come in and are like goals on 7 of their first 11 power play opportunities the way they kind of were against LA. It's like you're dead in the water, right?
And I think, we can throw discipline in there as well, right? It's all part and parcel.
100%.
The ratio has to be good, but you have to reduce the number of times that you're giving them opportunities as well, as much as you can.
Yeah, but so Vancouver's shown enough robustness in terms of their 4-on-5 play that at least I'm going into this thinking, hey, maybe they've got a puncher's chance. Like Nashville was converting at a 30% clip, roughly 28-something. After the All-Star break, and they look completely lost 5-on-4 in round one. Like Vancouver's penalty kill took over that series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to need, again, you don't need to be that good against the Oilers. You're not going to be that good against the Oilers power play. But this, at least they're trending in a direction where they can hopefully limit the damage, and they absolutely have to, especially early on in the series, because their winning game script requires this, in my opinion, to go long. To where the officiating standard changes, and you can kind of pull like one of those smash and grabs in a game 6 or a game 7.
Yeah, and again, does that give players like Nikita Zadorov more of an opportunity to kind of play that game and be physical later on in the series?
Right, exactly.
But you have to get to that point in the series to really feel like, I don't want to say the gloves can come off, but you know what I mean, right? Where you can really ramp it up without fear of, if we do something even the slightest bit wrong, we're going to send Edmonton the power play and they're going to punish us.
100%. So. Here's one of the big edges that I think the Canucks actually do have in the series, and this is also where I read something into what we saw on Oilers ice in game 80 of the regular season for Vancouver. So one place where I think Vancouver has a meaningful edge in this series is I think their speed up front. Not against the Oilers forwards necessarily, but against the Oilers defense. Okay? The Canucks fundamentally are arsonists, right? They are trying to pounce on your mistakes, quick ups off of your mistakes, and then they want to hold the puck. They want to hold the puck and grind you down and make you make mistakes and score against tired legs through layered screens. We all know how this Canucks team wants to play. The Oilers are going to have solutions, especially with number 97 on the ice, a one-man breakout machine designed to just like singularly combust Vancouver's neutral zone wedge. But if Vancouver can punish Edmonton on the forecheck, right? And in particular, if they can play the way they did, using that speed of their forward group against the Oilers' defense, the way they did for 40 minutes after Lafferty scored in that game in Edmonton. Again, the McDavid qualifier is a big one, but still. Then you can make this the sort of series where you get the first goal and you're able to kill time in the Oilers' end of the rink, right? And burning clock with a lead. If you're able to do that even in just the non-McDavid minutes, man, that's going to be the sort of thing this Canucks team can execute, can hang their hat on, can really use to their advantage in this series. And we've seen them do it against this Oilers team sans McDavid. Is it different when McDavid hits the ice? For sure. But if you're able to bottle them up when you have a lead, except for those minutes that McDavid's on the ice, you've at least reduced the danger
by a significant amount. If you can play the shift before McDavid comes on the ice in the Edmonton end of the rink and they have to dump it out, or it's an exit without control before they can change, like, you're at least giving yourself a fighting chance against McDavid when he comes on the ice, right? Like, I'm not saying it's...
Nah.
No, but it's better than him coming on with control. Way better.
Mm.
You can still set yourself up to have a better chance. You can.
Nah. Oh,
come on.
No, man.
You'd rather McDavid come on already with control of the puck.
I would way rather McDavid come on and it's a stationary attacking situation than that McDavid comes on and is like, okay, I'm going to go back and get the puck and skate 150 feet at you.
No. I mean, if Edmonton is dumping the puck in, out, right?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And McDavid is skating like a freight train onto it while Tyler Myers pivots or Nikita Zadorov pivots?
I don't know.
Stop it.
If you have a controlled exit from your own end, then I'd way rather be in that situation where you have possession of the puck than Edmonton does.
I guess.
100%. Not even close.
Guy is such a monster that I'm like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, he's really
saying,
good. He's really good. I'm not saying it's a magic bullet.
He's specifically dangerous if he has a head of steam. What I don't want is McDavid having a head of steam. So if he comes on and it's a stationary and he has to loop around the offensive zone and create, it's still scary. But, like, it's McDavid through the neutral zone that I'm like, ugh. That's more than anything what I'm talking about. Like, McDavid skating at a 50-50 in the neutral zone is like, oh, God.
Yeah.
That's where I think, you know.
But he's so to that terrifying. Point about spending time in Edmonton's offensive zone, I haven't pre-vetted your list, so I don't know if we're doubling up here, but it feels like Quinn Hughes is going to have to play so much in this series, right? Because the best bet for the Canucks to spend a lot of time in Edmonton's end of the rink is to play Quinn Hughes a lot, right?
Yep.
Like, he is the guy who can tilt the ice for this
play
team.
Keep away.
They're going to have to do that. And yes, it's going to have to involve also generating grade A scoring chances from that zone time. But, like, more than anything else, especially obviously if they have the lead, if you can just kill time in Edmonton's zone, and I think they need Quinn Hughes to do that.
Yeah. Go. Vancouver's clear advantage going into this series, their most obvious one, is the best defenseman on this series wears a Canucks jersey, and that needs to matter. That needs to matter.
And by the way, Quinn Hughes, I think, led Canucks in 5-on-5 ice time by like almost 3 minutes in game 6, right? Which was not what we'd seen earlier in that series. So I think that's a positive trend in terms of his health, how he's feeling. And I know we've got rave reviews from Rick Tocchet on what the Zadorov, Soucy, Myers, Cole group of four did, but that's great. It's great that they're, you know, really solid in their defensive end, but they're going to need to rely on Quinn Hughes to move the puck in the right direction and amp those minutes up.
And they're going to need to rely on the other four, too. Like, you know, Zadorov, we're getting some offense from, we're getting some puck moving from, but they do need to just get more offensively when that Soucy Myers pair is on the ice. Okay, overall defensive game, like, Vancouver's defense needs to make a huge difference in this series. We know that Nashville versus Vancouver was bumper car hockey, right? But ultimately, the series turned, in my opinion, like, there's a bunch of reasons. But the main one for me is Vancouver's best thing, their defense, won out over Nashville's biggest strength, which is the ability to generate scoring chances, right? Like, Nashville generated just over 2 expected goals per hour, 5-on-5, and about 20 scoring chances per hour at 5-on-5 in round one. Those are, like, appalling numbers. That's like a hockey team that's going to score 150 goals if you play like that over 82 games. It's nothing. Like, they generated nothing.
And that, from where they were in the second half of the year, like,
to that,
a catastrophic fall off for them.
Yeah, it's impressive. Like, don't underrate that it's impressive, right? It's, while Nashville isn't chock full of elite finishers or anything, like, we're not talking about conversion rates. We're talking about how much you generate. And the Predators generated, like, the Colorado Avalanche in the second half of the season, and Vancouver gave them nothing. So give the Canucks their flowers for just how locked down they were defensively in that first round. Edmonton, we know, an entirely different beast, right? Like, we're talking Pikachu, Raichu. We're talking an evolutionary offensive force here. But even if that's the case, there's at least a chance, and not the whole series, but there's at least a chance that Vancouver can drag like three of the seven games into the mud, right? If you can drag a few games into the mud, maybe three, then you can at least, if you win them, because just dragging the games into the mud and making it a one-shot game by no means guarantees, as we saw in this series, that you actually win those games. But if you're able to do that and you win those games, then you can set up a do-or-die game seven on home ice with all the pressure on the Oilers. Like, that's the underdog game script that Vancouver has to execute here.
And I also think if we, you know, we focused in the Nashville series, obviously, so much on Vancouver's offensive frustration. But if you watch game six, like, there's Nashville players looking to the sky after they miss chances or after,
totally,
you know, a puck goes off their stick. Like, they were deeply frustrated, understandably so, because they were getting way less than they're accustomed to against the Canucks. And this isn't, you know, oh, Edmonton's mentally soft, like, but every player gets frustrated. Every player is open to frustration, is susceptible to frustration if you're playing that relentless shutdown defense against them. And that, again, that has to be part of the story here for the Canucks, is just frustrating the hell out of the Edmonton Oilers defensively.
Well, if you don't want to go after Edmonton's mentality, just wait.
Do it.
Wait till number five on the list. You ready?
Let's do it.
So, You know, I have this formulation, right? That you bump into, like, the playoffs are pretty random early on, and then you get deep into the playoffs and you bump into what I call the truth serum team, right? The truth serum team is the bona fide elite team loaded up and down the lineup that can expose the Cinderellas, you know, for being fretful ball attendees looking weirdly at the watch, at their watch every 5 minutes, right? Nice glass slippers, babe. So, are the Oilers a true serum quality team yet? Right? Like, you kind of have to earn that, in my opinion. And while they've definitely raised their game in the playoffs so far, and clearly know how to win and know how to play more physically and know how to play the game within a game in the postseason, they've yet to win a game in the conference final as a group. Right? Like, they've won rounds, they've been deep into the playoffs, but they've yet to win a game in the conference final. And let's be honest. Coming into this season, I thought the Oilers were going to win the President's Trophy. I thought they were pretty much complete in terms of their overall lineup. I thought they had a different level of depth this year. I liked what the Ekholm addition did to the sort of their top four mix. I thought their top pair had a chance to be among the best in the league. And I bought that Stuart Skinner was, like, fine. Average, at least. And that, at least that part was true. And the Oilers kind of have a little bit of, like, you know, they find out, put it that way. They have a little bit of, like, they're not always focused. And I think you saw it in the Kings series, where it's like they crushed the Kings so easily, and then they lose that one high-scoring game. It was game two, right?
Mm-hmm.
They lose that game two, and there was no reason for it. Like, you're watching the game, and it's just like the Oilers thought it was going to be easy, and they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal for no reason. We saw this right out the gate against the Canucks. Like, the Oilers came to Vancouver to play game one, and they thought it was going to be easy, and they played summer pond hockey. And this isn't me saying it. This is how Canucks players felt about it. Like, I've heard it from Canucks players in the room that those first two games against the Oilers, they thought the Oilers were playing loose and that they wanted to just, like, find their hands, and they weren't taking it very seriously. And the Canucks win those games and feel great about themselves, and then had, like, the reality of the Philly-Tampa experience.
Yeah.
And responding to that, right? Like, really, I think, set the stage for the start and then for everything that's come since, including this team leveling up defensively as the course of the over the course of the year. So, you know, I just think before we call this Oilers team a true serum team, and they definitely might be, don't get me wrong, but, like, as opposed to a team like Dallas or Colorado or even Vegas, I think it's fair to say that they have to, like, earn that respect. They might be the best side in hockey outright, right? Like, this might be one of those takes that 3 weeks from now we'll look back and be like, well, the Oilers figured it out for sure. And that's fine. They could emerge in 6 weeks and we'll call them the truth serum team with the quality, depth, and tactical ruthlessness that implies. But we haven't seen it yet. And we don't owe them that respect now. Like, we don't owe them that respect yet. And neither do the Canucks. Like, they've got to earn it. And this is a series in which they can earn it.
And I think if there's one thing that the 4-0 series sweep could play a role in, it's at least convincing the Canucks that they don't have to respect the Oilers like that, right? You have to respect them, but you don't have to see them as a level above you, right? You can both embrace the underdog status while believing that you can beat them. And I think that plays into it. Like, okay, Edmonton's not the Leafs, right? Where it's been disappointing first-round exit after disappointing first-round exit. They've won series. McDavid and Draisaitl have put up ridiculous points in the playoffs. But there is still this mounting pressure year after year after year in the McDavid-Draisaitl era to really make it count, to really get at least to the Stanley Cup final, if not actually take home the trophy. And that pressure is just different than what the Canucks are feeling right now. There's always pressure. You win your division. You have a great season, right? You want to go far. That pressure always exists. But it's a different type of pressure for the Edmonton Oilers than it is for the Canucks. And look, they're the underdogs. And as I said earlier in the show, they should embrace it because it lets them play a little looser, right? You can embrace being the underdog without gassing up the Oilers or without believing that they're on a completely different level than the Canucks are. And they can go have a chance to win this series.
Some initial reporting, including from Darren Dreger, by the way, that indications are Travis Green will be the next head coach of the Ottawa Senators.
Wow. Congratulations to Travis Green getting a chance with the Ottawa Senators.
It's a hard league.
It's a hard league
to get a job in.
It is a very hard league to get a job in. Very, very interesting hire. Okay, Gemma Carson-Smith from the Canadian Press joins us next. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. Gemma Carson-Smith next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Mike Halford
and Jason Brough.
Join us for Halford and Brough in the Morning weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 650.
Or on demand anytime through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintec Studio, 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Do we have Gemma on the line? Not yet, but Gemma Carson-Smith is going to join us momentarily here from the Canadian Press. And, of course, the Canucks practicing out at UBC today. No lineup changes, again, as per Brendan Batchelor. I did see that Thatcher Demko was skating after practice with Ian Clark, so his status will continue to be a big talking point and something to monitor throughout the course of this series. Hopefully we'll have a little bit of audio from Rick Tocchet to play later on in the show as well. 650-650, as mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And now we do have our pal from the Canadian Press covering the Canucks, Gemma Carson-Smith, on the show. Gemma, thank you as always. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, friends?
I'm doing great. How much did you enjoy the Friday to Wednesday break that we're in the middle of? Or are you enjoying the Friday to Wednesday break for Canucks games that we're in the middle of right now?
Yeah, it's nice to have a little taste of normalcy. But back at it.
Back at it. All right. So we're moving forward. We're focusing on the Oilers coming up here on Wednesday. But just quickly looking back at the Game 6 victory, the Round 1 victory, what's your kind of big takeaway from the series as a whole for the Canucks beating Nashville in Round 1 of the playoffs?
I'm impressed by the guys who stepped up. We've made a lot of the guys who were less than noticeable, Elias Pettersson, but I'm impressed by the guys who stepped up. I didn't think we would see Zadorov take on such a big role. Obviously, Shelov is an incredible story. It's good to see Lindholm come alive, and I liked what Tocchet said about this is why we got him, because yeah, he's performed really well through the first six playoff games. So I'm impressed by those guys. There's obviously lots of work to be done, and this is this next series is going to be such a different test. But I think that if those performances continue and some of the notable stars of this team start to find their own game, this will be some very exciting hockey to watch.
Do you see the Predators win as validating anything for this team?
I mean, making it through the first round playoff series is obviously going to be an accomplishment, right? But I don't think that this team is, they would say that they're not satisfied. And that's understandable, right? Like, they were at the top of the league for most of the regular season. That said, I mean media folks, a lot of media folks thought that they were going to be a bubble team, myself included, heading into the regular season. So I think it's something they should be proud of. Is it validating? I don't know, because there's obviously a long way to go. Playoffs often continue into the middle of June, and we're only in May right now.
Artur Shelov's getting the shutout in Game 6 and, you know, just looking really, really calm. And, of course, there's the fun with JT Miller wearing his shirt. What's kind of first of all, were you surprised that Shelov's got the nod in Game 6? And what do you make of him kind of stepping up and grabbing hold of the starter's job here?
I was a little bit surprised. I honestly thought they would go back to DeSmith. Not because Shelov had done anything wrong. He'd been great, but I just thought that DeSmith might have been a more stable presence for them. That said, Shelov like rose to the occasion. I'm so impressed at how this kid has like stepped up and stepped in and is completely unfazed by the experience. Like I don't know if he has feelings, but he's been great. It's been really impressive. He's played well. The team has played well in front of him, and it's just a great story. It's neat to see the videos of fans chanting his name outside the rink. It's neat to see the whole interplay between him and Miller. It's these stories come about in every playoff season. It's neat to witness one firsthand.
What do you make of JT Miller not just sort of taking over, like caping up for the Canucks throughout that series, but seeming to have such a good pulse on when to lighten the mood, whether it's Garland shirts or Artur's dress shirt at practice? It seems like right now he's pressing all the right buttons as this team's emotional leader.
Yeah, it might be just me, but it seems like he's taken kind of a giant leap in terms of his maturity this season, and I think that that's what we're seeing. He's come into his own in a way as a player and like as a leader, and he just knows he's been around for a long time, right? Like he's got a good pulse on this team and what they need. He's one of the only top guys who's been in these situations before, and so he knows, right? But we've kind of seen it all season. He's really been a bit of a barometer for where the club's emotions need to be, and it's been really interesting to see. We've envisioned him as such a kind of emotional guy in the past, and now I think we see him channeling that emotion and kind of trying to direct those feelings into more of a leadership role. It's really interesting to see, because I didn't see it coming, but I'm also not a JT Miller whisperer, so there's that.
Well, you might not be, but I mean, that was one of the kind of phrases tossed around when Rick Tocchet was hired, right? And I don't want to take credit away from JT Miller, right? Because, you know, there has to be action and growth from the player's perspective as well. But, you know, without being in the room every day or seeing the relationship between the two, from the outside, it definitely looks like, you know, Rick Tocchet was able to help unlock that new style of leadership and that new success as a leader from JT Miller. And, you know, for all we talk about the defensive structure and the habits and the staples and all of that, that has to be one of Rick Tocchet's more impressive accomplishments in a really impressive season behind the bench for the Canucks.
And it's not just JT Miller. When we were in Nashville, I had a really good chat with Connor Garland about Rick Tocchet and their relationship and kind of how Garland has evolved as a player, but also what role Tocchet has played in that and how Tocchet has evolved as a coach. And Garland was talking to me about how Tocchet is a great man who these are Connor Garland's words, he's a great man who truly cares about his players and is constantly checking in on all of them. I think that those relationships have really borne out in the way this team plays. This team plays for Rick Tocchet. He has found ways to connect with each and every one of these guys and get them going, right? And I don't think that's an easy thing to do because they're all very different people and they have different playing styles and different challenges and blah, blah, blah. So I think that that is a huge reason why Tocchet is the favorite for the Jack Adams this year. The way that he has connected with his players and got the most out of them is really impressive.
So looking ahead to Edmonton now, and you know, one of the interesting dynamics already in the lead up to this series is the Canucks, you know, despite winning the Pacific Division, obviously having home ice over Edmonton in this series, are pretty significant underdogs. Whether you look at the betting markets, you know, models, expert picks, whatever it is, a lot of people expecting Edmonton to win this one. And I find it interesting, you know, Rick Tocchet spoke yesterday and said, like, hey, I love when people are doubting us, right? People looked at us as a bubble playoff team before the season. It was fun to prove them wrong. That's a label he's very comfortable with. Is this something that, you know, is kind of just fodder for us to kick around and debate, and we have people texting in like, oh, how can you call the Canucks underdogs? They won the Pacific Division. Is this just for kind of external consumption, or does this, like, expectations gap, right? The weight of expectations being now on Edmonton instead of the Canucks. Could this actually play a role in the series, in your view?
Expectations gap is a good way to put it, for sure. I think, like, the regular season Oilers, especially this regular season, are not the Oilers that we're seeing now. The Oilers in the playoffs are a completely different beast. And I know that's an overused cliche, but it's also true. Like, you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Like, when you have those weapons and they truly come alive in the playoffs, it's a different world. You've seen that the last few seasons, and I think that they also have the experience of the last few seasons to build on. This Canucks team, as great as they were in the regular season, was not as great towards the end, and they don't have that playoff experience as a group, right? Even the guys who have been there before weren't there with the other guys who are on this team. So I think that it makes a lot of sense that they're the underdogs coming in. That said, I don't think that they care, per se. Maybe they're all lying to us when they say that it doesn't matter. But I think that they're just so focused on being the Canucks that they've, that kind of like resilient team that they've been all season, that they don't really care what other people are saying. I like what Rick Tocchet said about how he thrives on it. He also, remember that he also tried to like pit the Canucks as the underdogs in the Nashville series.
Well, he kind of tried to say they were like joint underdogs.
Exactly.
Right? He was nobody expected either of us to be here, right?
Yeah. You can't both be underdogs. That's not what an underdog is. Like, someone has to actually go under. Anyway, I think that the Canucks are the true underdogs going into this one, no matter what the standings said at the end of the season. I think that the team that the Canucks were at the end of the season was so different than the one that they were, and by so different, I mean they were playing it slightly differently than they were when they faced the Oilers those three times early in the season. And the Canucks, or the Oilers, sorry, are obviously such a different team, different coach, and just a different playing style. So I think that it makes a lot of sense that Edmonton's favored. That said, I think if the Canucks can keep most of the play to 5-on-5, they're not dead in the water. Like, they're not just chum to be fed to sharks here. They can play with the Oilers. They've proved that. It's just a question of, can they actually manage those weapons?
With the way penalties, and there's already a lot of discussion. I mean, Tocchet right after the game 6 win, I sort of asked him about the penalty kill and whether that gives you confidence going into an ultimate test. And he talked about, you know, hoping that the referees just let the team play. He talked yesterday about hating embellishment. It feels like we're already starting to see a dynamic in this series begin to emerge where, you know, Tocchet praising and kind of subtly working the refs in advance. How do you sort of think about that part of what we're about to witness?
For sure. It's not just Tocchet either. Remember that Zadorov quote about how everyone on the ice has to be at their best? He wasn't talking about the Zamboni driver.
Yeah, but then the Canucks drew zero penalties in game six, so I think Tocchet's fighting a fire there.
True.
That's my read anyway.
Yeah, but I think that it's definitely there's a lot of chess that happens behind the scenes, right? And I think that this is part of that. He knows what he's doing. Rick Tocchet is no dummy. Like I said, there's a reason he's up for the Jack Adams, reason that he's going to win it. He knows exactly what he's saying, and I understand it, right? Like the Oilers power play is lethal. They're clicking at what, like 50% for that King series? That's bananas. So yeah, the less you want to face that, or the less, I'm sorry, the you want to face that as little as possible.
Yeah.
Duh. that is a Captain Obvious right there. But it's also true. Like, and it's not just about facing limiting what you do with your stick. It's also about giving the refs a little reminder, like, hey, I know what you're doing here. So,
And giving the refs a little pat on the back for doing a great job, as Rick Tocchet has done many times this season. He's been very, very complimentary about the refs. Okay, Gemma, we were exploring maybe the script that the series has to follow for the Canucks to get it done against Edmonton earlier in the show. So I'll kick it over to you. Finish this sentence. The Canucks can beat the Oilers if...
Oh, this is where I speak. Got
this
it.
This is where you speak.
the Canucks can beat the Oilers if they can stay disciplined in terms of not taking unnecessary penalties, and they can get their stars scoring. You have to score goals to win hockey games. I know that is a real news bulletin.
So you're saying they have to outscore the Oilers for them to win the series?
Yeah, which is not easy.
It's true. Well, Edmonton scores an awful lot. Gemma, can we get a car flag check from you? Are you seeing an increase? Is it popping up more and more around the city?
This morning, my daughter said she wanted two car flags at her car. I died.
Always those closest to you that break your heart, Gemma.
I'll update you on the car flag situation in Edmonton next week.
All right, Gemma, thank you as always. We'll chat next week.
Bye.
That is Gemma Karsten-Smith from the Canadian Press here joining us as she does every week on Canucks Talk, looking ahead to the Canucks and the Oilers. And again, I throw it out there. Okay, what do they need to do? They'll win, or they can win, if, and discipline, right? And that is going to be the buzzword, I think, over the next couple of days, at least until the series gets going and we get some fresh fodder, some fresh grist for the mill here to go over. But it's just true. It's just factually true, right? That you're going to be playing with fire absolutely every time that you take a penalty against the Oilers. Now, the other thing she mentioned was star players getting going, right? And obviously, I mean, like, she's not talking about Brock Besser. I don't think she's talking about JT Miller. She's talking about Elias Pettersson. We haven't talked a lot about Elias Pettersson yet and kind of his role in this series. It definitely looked better in games 5 and 6 against Nashville, but that's also starting from a very, very low point in his performance, right? Makes a key play on the series winning goal for Pugh Suter. But it just has to get so much better than that in a hurry for Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, and that play was vital, right? Because one of the areas in particular where Pettersson has not looked right, right, in addition to the sort of shot velocity stuff, is, the battles down low, right? The battles down low, he's just not winning them the way he usually does. He's not finding the deke that makes the space, that creates the lane to make the pass. And then all of a sudden at the pointy end of the series, late in game six, he just completely outduels and outmuscles Jeremy Lauzon, the NHL's hits leader. Along the wall, gets the puck to Besser. Besser makes a great play. That was a crucial moment. And exactly the sort of play that Pettersson hadn't been making over the course of that series. So, yeah, I mean, shots with Pettersson on the ice 5-on-5 in that series, 22-31. Besser and Miller played 20 more minutes than him at 5-on-5, which is, that tells you everything.
Yeah, that's a huge gap. Massive. Well, Elias Lindholm played him at. Played more minutes than him at 5-on-5.
Only by a minute.
Yeah, but still.
But the gap between Besser and Miller, like, Tocchet couldn't take those guys off the ice. He was like, I need these guys to go to win. And he just didn't deploy Pettersson that way. And that's right. Like, how could he have?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, they need Pettersson to win his matchup. I don't know what state or how likely that is. I do think, and I'm hopeful that moment late in game six will help him a bit.
Well, and I will say with game six, I know, you know, I forget if it was the first or the second intermission, but the Hockey Night panel kind of ran through some lowlights from that game specifically, for at least from their perspective, from Elias Pettersson. But watching game six, I didn't think it was a notably poor performance, except in the context of his series being disappointing.
Right.
You know what I mean? If that game had come after a number of good games from Elias Pettersson, nobody would have commented on it. Nobody would have been, you know, he's in this moment now where he is so in the spotlight, understandably so, as one of the team's best players, signing a massive deal, kicking in next year, all of those things. Of course he's going to be in the spotlight, but you start to really go through it kind of shift by shift to look for the flaws, but it felt like just kind of a normal game. Not great. I'm not saying he was spectacular in game six or anything, but it wasn't like the earlier games in the series where it seemed like everything he was trying was off. You know what I mean? Like game two, where he's just making bad plays, missing the net. It just felt like kind of a neutral game. And as frustrating as it is, that's a step in the right direction. But, you know, you say he's got to win his matchup. Like, he might have to crush his matchup. You know what I mean? Like, it might not be just winning. Like, he might have to dominate his matchup to really give his team a shot in this series.
Well, and there's down lineup impacts if he doesn't, right? So the following Canucks players outshot the Predators. The Canucks outshot the Predators with the following Canucks players on the ice 5-on-5 in the first round. Brock Besser, mm-hmm. Ian Cole, Quinn Hughes, Pugh Suter, JT Miller, Nikita Zadorov, Filip Hronek. There's a trend here, right? Top line, top pair, third pair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In terms of the second pair, right? Like, because sort of the biggest issue for the team was they weren't out shooting with Pettersson on the ice. But, like, Myers Soucy got outshot 16-47. In 85 minutes.
That's not ideal.
16 shots on goal, man.
Not ideal.
And the attempts, 50, like this is just for Soucy. We'll use Soucy as the stand-in. He played five more minutes than Myers. 58 shot attempts for 102 against. Right? And I think a big part of what we're talking about here is the like sort of minutes where, again, we've talked a lot about how Rick Tocchet has tried to approach things. And one of the logic, like one of the internal logic of this team has been play your second pair with one of your best play driving forwards to sort of help insulate them and then trust Hughes and Miller to win the matchup against Tufts. That's kind of been a mainstay. You know, Pettersson played a lot with Hughes and Hronek, and the Canucks were outshot in those minutes, which is deeply uncharacteristic.
That's a huge red flag.
But the second most minutes were spent with Myers Soucy, 23 minutes, Pettersson and Myers together, 3 shots, 4-12 against.
Oof.
Like, that absolutely cannot happen.
No.
In your, like, McLeod minutes, if it's Pettersson-McLeod, which is what I'd expect. Because the Edmonton Oilers will torch you. They will. Like, even that third line, you know, we're getting some texts in. Oilers have a line and a half. It's like, Holloway, Perry, McLeod can do damage. You know, Fogle plays third line minutes for them, even if he takes rushes on the fourth line. Janmark's a good player,
mm-hmm.
an outright good player. I think Janmark would be playing top six for the Canucks right now, which I don't even know if that's a hot take given what they're playing in their top six.
Ilya Mikheyev, what, one goal in getting close to 60 games?
Yeah. So anyway, that trend absolutely needs to reverse for the Canucks in this series.
Yeah, and again, we can point to the supporting players on the ice with Elias Pettersson. I think that's absolutely fair to do, but you also need to see more individually from Elias Pettersson in this series, especially if he is getting those softer matchups. Not easy. I'm not saying they're pushovers or anything like that, but much softer matchups compared to, you know, potentially going up against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl at the top of Edmonton's lineup. If it plays out like that again, Elias Pettersson's got to find a way to have a big impact in this series. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Threadco Print Shop. It's the Lower Mainland's choice for exceptional branded apparel, quality screen printing and embroidery crafted in their new state-of-the-art facility, threadcoprint.com. We'll take a break. One more hour of the show coming up. We'll try to get some Rick Tocchet audio in here at some point. Should be coming in shortly. They practiced out at UBC today. And we can take your texts, too. What are you thinking ahead of the Canucks and the Oilers? Are you nervous? Are you excited? What do you expect to see? Hit us up. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.